Namaskaram, dear listeners. Welcome once again to Vahini Satsang with prayers at Bhagwan's lotus feet. As we continue our journey trying to understand the different tenets of Indian culture that Bhagwan has shared in chapter 17 of Prema Vahini. In the previous session, if you are following this program, we discussed the third segment of chapter 17. And in this, Bhagwan talks about how Bharat is the source of the Sanatana Dharma. And we had Mr. Raj Srivatsan from the US, a management consultant, as well as a very distinguished lawyer, sharing his thoughts about how it is so important in these times to understand the relevance of Indian culture and how mothers play such a vital role in passing on this information to the coming generation. And you also had Brother Bhargav share his insights about what Bhagwan has mentioned about how we can make proper utilization of what the sages and saints have given to us. There are so many very profound things that Bhagwan talks about in this third segment of chapter 17. So let us listen to this once again, and then we will take up one or two things that were perhaps not deliberated enough in the previous session. Brother Sai Prakash is with me as always. So we will take that up, and then we'll move on to the fourth segment of chapter 17. So here is 17.3 for you.
నేడు లోకమున చూడు, ఏదో కొన్ని కొన్ని కొత్త రకమైనటువంటి మిషన్ కార్లు, ఇంజనులు ఇతర దేశములలో కనిపెట్టి వాటిని తదితర దేశాలకు ఎగుమతి చేసినను వాటి ఆదిస్థానము మాత్రము మరువరానిదిగా ఉన్నది. వాటి అనుభవముగానే అట్టి మిషనులు, అట్టి కార్లు తయారు చేయవచ్చును. అయితే ఆధారము లేక ఏమీ చేయలేరు. అటులనే భారతదేశమందు సనాతన ధర్మము ఉద్భవించి దాని ప్రభావమును మహాపురుషుల మూలమున, వారు రచించిన శాస్త్ర గ్రంథ మూలమున పరదేశీయులు పొందిరే కాని ఆది తన స్థానాధారమును వీడలేదు. అది అసాధ్యము. ఇట్టి పావన ధర్మములను పాలతో పెంచబడిన పుణ్యపురుషుల పుట్టినిళ్ళైన ఈ భారతదేశమున నేటి నవీన పద్ధతులే మన ధర్మమని, సనాతన ధర్మపు సారమును రుచిచూడక దాని అర్థమును సహితం తెలిసికొనక వ్యర్థపు వాదనలతో దానిని మరుగుపరిచి పరదేశీయులకు ఒప్పజెప్పి వగచుచుండుట చూచి విచారంగా ఉన్నది. ఇందుకు కారణము సరియైన మార్గదర్శకులు లేకుండుటే. ఉండినను ఇప్పటి నవీన పద్ధతులకు ప్రవేశమిచ్చి వాటి వాసన మూలమున తరిగిపోవుచున్నారు. ఇవి కేవలం సంత పకోడీల వంటివి. వట్టి వాసనలను పట్టి ఒళ్ళును పాడుచేసుకుందురు కాని యథార్థపు పదార్థమును పరిశీలించరు. సనాతన ధర్మమైన స్వధర్మమునందు ఎంతో పరిశుభ్రమైన పదార్థముండియు ఆడంబరముచే ఆకర్షించు వాసనలు లేకపోవుటే ఇట్టి అశ్రద్ధకు కారణం. సత్యమునకు అట్టి ఆడంబరాలు అనవసరం, రుచియే ప్రధానం. ఇప్పటి మానవులు కేవలం వాసనా ఇష్టులై చెరించుటే ఇందుకు మూలం. యథార్థమును వదిలి పరధర్మముల పాటించుట నేడు పరిపాటైనది. ఇది చాలా పొరపాటు. ఆకర్షించు వాసనలు, పై పద్ధతులను చూసి భ్రమించుట భారతీయులకు ధర్మ విరుద్ధం.
In the world today, there could be many cars or machines being made in one country and exported to other nations, but no one forgets the original manufacturer. Taking the make of the original manufacturer as the basis, others may make more cars and machines. Without that basis, they will not be able to undertake such projects. Similarly, Bharat is the original home of Sanatana Dharma. People of other lands benefited from it through the lives of great personages and their literary works. Though this has happened, Sanatana Dharma has never left its original home. This, in fact, is impossible. Bharat is the birthplace of so many such great personages who were nourished by the milk of this sacred Sanatana Dharma. It is a matter of concern that today, without tasting the sweetness of Sanatana Dharma or making an attempt to understand its essence, people take to modern practices as their dharma and indulge in vain arguments. They not only neglect Sanatana Dharma, but also hand it over to the foreigners and later regret their acts. We have reached this state because of lack of enlightened leaders. Even if they are there, their number is dwindling because they are being influenced by modern practices. This is like buying pakoda from a roadside vendor, lured by its smell alone and not discriminating about its quality, and therefore falling ill. Likewise, people today are disinterested with their swadharma, which is the Sanatana Dharma, even though it is pure because it does not have the smell of showiness. Truth does not need such ostentation. What is important is sweetness. People today are carried away by the smell of pomp and show. To disregard the reality and follow other practices has become the fashion of the day. This is a serious mistake. It is against the dharma of a Bharatiya to be attracted by such smell and be deluded in this manner.
So in this segment, you know, one thing that Swami talks about, which we didn't discuss last time, and I feel is so important, it is a very, very powerful statement here. Swami is saying that people today are disinterested with their swadharma, which is the Sanatana Dharma. Swami is saying Sanatana Dharma is our swadharma. I think that is a very, very powerful injunction that Bhagwan is stating here. And how we are not able to follow this because we are so much carried away by the showiness, and we are so much carried away by what other people say. You know, as Swami says, you are not one but three. The one you think you are, the one others think you are, and the one you really are. If you're all the time focused about what others are thinking about us, and
right,
you're all the time carried away by that, then that is a sure way to lose the sight of who you really are.
Absolutely, because here the interesting thing is Swami saying Sanatana Dharma is Swadharma.
Swadharma, yes.
And I think Lord Krishna gives very beautiful definitions of what Swadharma and Paradharma is in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
But as Professor Venkatraman always says, Swami's definition of what Swadharma is,
yes,
and Paradharma is very, very clear and, you know, adapted for modern times. But the beauty is, it all goes hand in hand. In a sense, Swami is saying that it is not, it is not the nature of Bharatiyas to go behind pomp and show. If you look at it, it's very interesting because pomp and show is about the external,
yes,
manifestation of, you know, your achievements or even your so-called show of spiritual achievement and your religiosity, whatever,
yes,
it may be.
Yes.
But Swadharma is everything to do with the internal.
Yes.
And once you are in sync with that,
yes,
there is no show.
There is no show.
There is no show. And so this analogy which Swami gives of the pakodas,
yes, yeah,
this evening as I was walking in, there were some pakodas in the studio.
And even as I was eating that, I could not but think about what Swami has mentioned.
There were some pakodas and I didn't think of it when I was having the pakodas. I really didn't think of it. But the analogy is so apt. I wish we make a good video out of this because,
yes,
you know, it's so perfect, even the analogies which Swami gives,
yes,
because we are not bothered about the oil the person is using.
Yes.
We are not bothered about the fact that it is on the roadside.
Yes.
There is,
yes,
so much dust. There is so,
yes,
much everything.
Yeah.
But the smell is something that,
yes,
pulls us along.
Yeah.
So that kind of show and that kind of sensationalism, if you may even call it,
yeah,
is nothing to do with Sanatana Dharma.
Mm. In fact, in another discourse, Swami gives another example of how one should not get carried away by what others say. Apparently, there was a fruit vendor who was selling mangoes. You
absolutely.
Remember that story?
Yes, yes.
So he calls a guy to paint a board.
Correct.
And he says that fruits are sold here.
Yes.
And so one passerby comes that way and he says, why do you write your fruits are sold here? I mean, it is understood that, you know, you're standing here, the fruits are here.
Right.
So you don't need the word here. Just say
fruits are sold.
And then he says, that's an interesting idea, actually. So, you know, then he calls the painter to ask him to erase that here. And then another guy comes and he says, what's wrong with you? You know, you are here, fruits are here. It is understood that it is a shop, you are selling. Why you should write fruits are sold?
Sold.
No, just, you don't need that. He says, yeah, I think that was interesting. I think you make sense. So he calls the painter again and he says, no, remove these
words, sold. Remove the word sold. Then fruits are.
Then finally what remains is only fruits. Mm. In our hostel parlors, he really became a fruit.
No, but Swami also adds that he ended up spending double the amount. Because he called the artist to paint it and again to paint over it.
Yeah. So that is how Swami says, you know, when we get carried away without focusing on what is our reality, and, you know, all the time we are so much outward focused, that is when, you know, we spend double the time, double the energy, and we ultimately get nothing out of it. In fact, I remember in one of the discourses Swami is saying that in spite of Bharat's such priceless heritage, many in this country behave like people under the shadow of a lamp who, unaware of its light, are attracted to distant things.
Mm.
And in fact, I cannot not but recollect Swami Vivekananda. You know, such very, very powerful words that Vivekananda has used. I think, you know, he was someone who really regenerated at that point in time. He created world's interest in
Correct.
This heritage.
Correct.
You know, especially galvanizing thousands of youth to understand what this culture is all about. And he says that Hindus have to study the past. The more you study the past, the more glorious will be your future. And whoever tries to bring the past to the door of everyone in the present, he will be the greatest benefactor of this nation. I think, you know, they were very, very powerful words. He says Indian thought, Indian manners, Indian customs, Indian philosophy, Indian literature, they might be repulsive at first sight, but you have to persevere. You have to read. And once you become familiar with their principles, what they are based on, then they will charm you. You'll be so fascinated with them. I think that's what is happening, you know. You have Orientalists, you have British Indologists, you have Western Indologists who have spent time trying to understand, you know.
Correct.
And they are the one who make those amazing statements about what Indian culture is all about. You know, you have Albert Einstein who said, we owe a lot to the Indians who taught us how to count, without which no worthwhile scientific discovery could have been made. I mean, if you have Swami always quotes about Max Muller. If I were asked under the sky, the human mind that has fully developed some of its choicest gifts and has most deeply pondered on the greatest problems of life and has found solutions, I should point to India.
Beautiful.
I think so many people who have spent that time trying to understand what is there in Indian culture.
It's, as we are talking about not having this kind of show and ostentation and an external manifestation of,
yes,
you know, all this fanfare. Swami used to be very much against it in,
yes,
every endeavor that he took up, like adambaram.
Oh, yes.
He says, no adambaram,
no
show.
Oh, yes.
And I think the press were like always kept way,
yeah,
you know, at a distance.
Yes.
I'm sure many of the devotees will remember that when Swami started the Gram Seva,
yes,
like Swami saw that there was a mother who had to feed poison to her three children because she didn't have food. And she also took poison and she passed on. So Swami was so moved with that and he said, in this glorious place of Bharat, how can such a thing happen? And he started the Gram Seva at that time. Yes. And I believe some teachers went up to him and said, Swami, people should know about this. And Swami said, keep quiet. If a mother is feeding her own children, will she go and announce? Yes. Will she go and announce on the radio, on the newspaper, on television that mother is feeding her own children? Yes. And so he was never for this pomp and show and for, you know, in fact, as we are sitting here in this studio in 2002 when Swami came here, I remember that beautiful statement. Swami was saying, I have nothing to do with this work that you all are doing. we who are thinking that after a long time, Swami has finally, you know, accepted to be heard via the radio, satellite radio, and possibly we had just started Radio Sai website at that time, and we thought, here we are going to take Swami's name, messages. He was very, very, very clear. He was sitting right here and he said, I have nothing to do with this work.
Yes.
I don't want this work. At that point, you know, I was sitting with a small camera in my hand. There was a shake.
It shook you.
It just shook me, Swami's sentence. But then, if you think of, and Swami added the sentence, he said, if this work is helping you to put my teachings into practice. Practical. If you are able to put it into practice, then do it. You are not doing anything to spread my name, my glory. Even that is not, you know, when you talk about show and pomp, people should not think that, oh, Baba has a 24/7 radio channel. No. He has very clearly stated that it is for yourselves. You are being given an opportunity.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with me.
Yes. I mean, that is so obvious. I mean, in how many occasions we have seen that, you know. Swami never wanted anything that was anywhere, even in wildest of imagination, also had any trace of quote-unquote publicity or showiness.
Correct.
I remember once when I was talking to a doctor in the super speciality hospital. In fact, the one who started the neurosurgery department, Dr. Hegde, was the director of the hospital also. I remember, you know, there was another hospital in Bangalore and they had performed a free surgery. And, you know, there was so much publicity about it.
Yeah.
The papers were talking about it. And, you know, that doctor was interviewed. The director of that hospital was interviewed.
Right.
And when I read that, I felt, oh my God, I mean, we are doing this every day.
Every day.
And why are we not talking about it, you know? So I asked him, sir, we should be talking about it, you know. They have just done one. And he said, you know what, if we have to do this, then we have to only do this. Because, you know, that's what we are doing day in and day out.
Correct.
But the other very moving thing I remembered as we were talking about, you know, the mother and child thing of Gram Seva. I remember when the Bangalore hospital was...
No, just before you switch over.
Yes.
He added one more statement on another occasion.
Yes.
He says, everything is contained in four words.
Yes.
They talk, we do. Just four words.
Absolutely.
He said four words.
Yes.
They talk, we do. That's all.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. Go back.
No, wow. Fantastic. And that's what Swami said, no, serve all, be nothing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, when the Bangalore hospital came up, you know, there was a different team that built that institution. And I remember in the initial years, because I was also involved at that point in time, so when they made the patient discharge summary, you know, one idea was, why not, you know, print the approximate cost of what has been spent for the patient in the discharge summary along with, you know, the patient's doctor's reports. So let the patient know what has been spent so that, you know, the patient will feel grateful, you know. But you'll write there, you know, waived off, whatever. So everyone felt it was a fantastic idea, and so it was presented to Swami. Swami, we want to do this. You know, Swami's immediate reaction was, if a guest comes to your home
and when the guest leaves, will you call that guest and say, you know what, actually this is the bill, but it's okay, you don't have to pay. It's okay, you don't have to pay.
My God.
See, Swami said, they are like gods. They are like guests who are
Atithi
coming.
Devo Bhava.
Atithi Devo Bhava. In fact, when the super specialty hospital Puttaparthi also was constructed, you know, initially it was a UK group of people from UK who were doing the construction, and then a lot of things happened, and later on Swami asked Colonel Bose, Brigadier Bose, the father of the current caretaker of the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum, to look after. And you know, when he looked at the drawings, and it looked to him quite impossible to achieve that. You know, he had just 5-6 months to do, and he thought, you know, can we simplify some things? And you know, he saw that Swami has and reduced the cost, of course. So he saw that, you know, the facade was very ornate and, you know, very elaborate. And when he went to Swami, Swami said, you can't change anything. Absolutely nothing. You're not changing anything. Then he said, okay, front we cannot change anything. Okay, at least inside. You know, inside he said, Swami, why do you need like granite flooring? You know, you can put simple tiles, or you know, you can have some simple flooring. So he went to Bhagwan and Swami said, do you know who is going to come into this hospital? All those people who are discarded by other hospitals, all those people who have never before dreamt of stepping into a hospital, they are the people who are going to come. And when they step in, I want them to give a feeling that they are stepping into a palace. They should get that feeling that, you know, we are really treated like kings.
Bah.
That experience they should get. How can you even think of, you know, bringing down anything which will bring down that experience? I mean, that is
what is important for Swami is.
But you know, here one thing which I'm very also passionate about, and Swami mentions again on these lines, is to disregard the reality and follow others' practices has become the fashion of the day.
Correct.
And I feel, you know, in today's times, you see that so much, you know, because there are so many amazing tenets of Indian culture, so many practices which have come to us through our sages and saints and through our traditions, and today, you know, we just jettison them because, you know, another culture is not doing it, or we feel we are not fashionable enough if we follow, if we wear that way, if we eat that way. And for example, if you take eating, for example, you know, in India, we eat with hands.
Correct.
You know, and today when you look at this simple practice of eating with hands, you know, in the West, some might consider this as primitive, you know, barbaric, you know, uncivilized, you know, how can you really eat unhygienic and all that? But if you look at our scriptures, the Vedas say that each finger is actually extension of one of the elements. So they say the thumb connotes the space, extension of space. The forefinger is air, vayu. The middle finger is fire. The ring finger is water. And the little finger is earth. And the Vedas have mentioned that eating food with your hands feeds not only the body, but also your mind and the spirit. And actually, if you see what they have found now, is our process of digestion begins the moment our fingers touch the food, actually, because at the fingertips you have the nerves, the nerve endings at the fingertips, and when the food touches the fingertips, that is when signals go to the stomach, and you know, because it's your whole body which is, you know, touching that, so you get an exact feel of the food, the temperature of the food, the spiciness of the food, you get a complete texture of the food, and accordingly, subconsciously, your stomach knows how much to release, what to release, how to release. I mean, it's such a fantastic mechanism, and they say that, you know, we are disrupting that natural process of digestion if you are giving up eating with hand. And of course, you know, when you think about it also, practically, you know, there are so many kinds of food. I mean, it's so difficult to eat with a, you know, how do you eat a dosa with, with a spoon or a fork?
Yeah. I mean, I think every aspect of life, like Swami used to say, way of life.
Yes.
Samskriti or fine, you know, the refinement.
Yes.
Sanatan Dharma and Sanskriti, these go hand in hand.
Yes.
He says that is refinement.
Yes.
And it's a way of life.
Yes.
So I think unless somebody else patents these practices and we get it back from them,
exactly.
Pay money and then adapt them and then we feel it's cool.
Yeah, we feel it's cool. Now, you know, now this is coming back.
Yeah.
Now it is coming back from the West to us as new age eating.
Correct.
You know, now they say that it's a new kind of hand food. So that's coming back now as hand food. You know? So there are restaurants now which encourage hand food. I mean, this is what we've been doing for years together.
Centuries
together. Hmm. And I found some more interesting facts about this hand food. And I mean, what is also now mentioned is scientifically that our hand has a lot of bacteria. Our palm has a lot of bacteria, and our body has, you know, trillions of these friendly bacteria.
Absolutely, yes.
And they say that when you eat with hand, those bacteria go into your stomach and they help in the process of digestion. Now science is coming back and telling us, you know, do this. Do this. And of course, and the last thing, you know, many times even I used to think, you know, is it really unhygienic, you know? Because that's what the West keeps saying, it's unhygienic. But when you actually think about it, you know, how clean is your hand? You know it much better than how clean is the spoon, actually. You know, you clean your hand 5-6 times a day or more. You know, you know it for yourself whether your hand is clean or... You have no idea whether the spoon is clean, you know? You don't even wash the spoon and the fork before you use eating. I mean, that's our misconception of... of what is hygienic and what is not. And I was just thinking, you know, like this, if you take every practice of Indian culture that has come, and before we wait for it to be rooted through the West and then we pay for it and then we learn and, you know, then we understand the importance of it, and that will be that is the tragedy of our times, actually.
Like turmeric and neem.
Yes. Yeah, somebody else patenting neem, somebody else patenting Gayatri Mantra. And now, when I remember Bhagwan talking about eating, Swami used to say that if you sit down and eat, you cannot overeat, Swami used to say. And, you know, you will eat the right amount of food and it helps in digestion, you know, eating on banana leaves. I mean, I feel, okay, even if you cannot practice everything, I think it's really, really important for us to know the profundity of what we have with us.
Absolutely.
And see, I remember when we became devotees at our home, my father said, from now on, we are going to sit down and eat. We gave up actually the dining table for a few years before coming to the hostel. You know, at that point in time, I was also so eager to join the hostel. I said, I will do everything how boys do in the hostel.
Training.
So, I think that is so interesting. And I feel this is something that we really need to focus on. And Swami says, it's against the dharma of a Bharatiya to be attracted by such smell. I mean, such outward show of other cultures and be deluded. So, I think there are many more things in this segment, but I think we'll move on to the next segment. Dear listeners, if you have opened the Prema Vahini, probably you will get many more ideas and many more insights. So please do share. But for now, let's move on to the next segment of Prema Vahini, Chapter 17.
Sanatana dharmamulo leni satyamu, parama prema, mare dharmamundunu levu, ravu. Sanatana dharmamu, satya swarupam, adi sarvula sottu. పవిత్రతకు ఏ నియమములు ఉండవు. పవిత్రత ఒక్కటియే, రెండు కాదు కదా. అట్టి సనాతన ధర్మమును అనుష్ఠించి జీవన్ముక్తులైన వారు, భగవద్ అనుగ్రహమును పొందినవారు, సత్యస్వరూపమును తెలుసుకున్నవారు, సాక్షాత్కారమును సాధించినవారు భారతీయులే. ఆ పవిత్ర స్థానమును పొందిన వారలను జాతి మత లింగభేదములు లేక భారతీయులే పూజించినారు. అట్టి సమయమున పవిత్రత సర్వ నిబంధనలను భస్మము చేయును. కాని ఆ స్థానమును పొందకమునుపే సర్వము సమానమును భావము తలంచ సాధ్యము కానిది. అయితే అట్టి పవిత్ర సనాతన ధర్మమును సాధించుటకు సాహసించవలెను. ఇది భారతీయుల కర్తవ్యం.
The truth and supreme love that is not present in Sanatana Dharma cannot and will not be found in any other dharma. Sanatana Dharma is the embodiment of truth. It is the heritage of all. Holiness has no boundaries. It is one without a second. Following the tenets of Sanatana Dharma, it is Bharatiyas alone who have become liberated souls, secured the grace of the divine, understood the nature of truth, and attained self-realization. Bharatiyas have worshipped all such self-realized masters, irrespective of their caste, faith or gender. In these cases, holiness obliterates all such boundaries. Before one attains this state, it is impossible to experience the feeling of oneness. One should courageously strive to attain this sacred Sanatana Dharma. This is the duty of every Bharatiya.
I think as Bhagwan has mentioned so many times, what is not there in Bharat is not there anywhere else.
Right.
And so here Swami is saying that all that truth and supreme love that you talk about, what is not there in Sanatana Dharma cannot and will not be found in any other. You remember when this chapter started, Bhagwan was mentioning that this is the ocean. Every other thought process actually merges into this. And I think that is what is conveyed here.
I was just reading one of those discourses from the Satya Sai Speaks first volume. Mm. And this is a discourse which Swami gave in 1959 as a part of the Adhyatmic Conference in Venkatagiri.
Mm, yes.
And we had gone to Venkatagiri.
Yes.
And we had gone to, the temple.
Yes.
Where Swami conducted the first Atirudrama Yajnam. And the most amazing part of Swami's life and the way Swami did things is that everything was in tune with the scriptures, was in tune with the practices of Sanatana Dharma, some of them even slightly ritualistic,
yes,
but only to the extent of what it connotes and what it means.
Yes.
I mean, no overdoing of anything.
Yes.
And at every given point in time, he stood for the inner meaning rather
yes.
than, what the external manifestation of the rituals or. So, in that discourse, Swami is addressing all the scholars who have come for this Adhyatmic conference, I believe. Swami is saying that here there was a scholar who spoke. And the scholar, in his talk, he mentions how certain people take to the scriptures and believe what the scriptures tell them, like the Vedas, Upanishads, Shastras, and they believe them, try to follow them and use that to attain their own goal. Others question them. So like you are saying, all streams merge into the...
Yes.
So even if you are questioning it, even if you are against it, you are still part of the Sanatana Dharma. Like
yes.
we read, it was even agnostics and, those who are atheists,
yes.
even they are part of Sanatana Dharma.
Yes.
So in that context, Swami is saying, here is a person, a great scholar, who is talking about how people follow scriptures religiously and many who question it. He says, I have no problem with either of the group. He says, you may follow it. If you want to, you may follow the scriptures. Or if you want to oppose it, you may oppose it. You may ask questions.
Mm.
Both of you, as long as you're doing it sincerely and you know what you're doing.
Yes.
He says, I have come to teach love.
Wow.
It was so powerful, so powerful. Swami is telling here, yes, you are talking about scriptures, you are talking about, Swami has himself spoken about Upanishads, he has spoken about everything, he has spoken about Vedas, Shastras, and he has told about the importance. And there are people who may question it, who may inquire, go into the path of inquiry. But Swami says, I have come to teach what love is. And once you have love, nothing else is important.
Yes.
So, in this stanza also, I think Swami starts that way, that
yes.
the love that Sanatana Dharma inspires.
Yes. 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 And what is not present in the Sanatana Dharma cannot and will not be found in any other dharma.
Exactly.
And I remember when Bhagwan was once talking about the Purusharthas, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and Swami used to say there is a Parama Purushartha, fifth Purushartha.
Right.
And that is Parama Prema.
Correct.
Parama Prema.
Yes.
Supreme love is the...
Yes.
Ultimate Purushartha.
One more thought which just came is, talking of how Swami has inspired his devotees, inspired the Sai organization, inspired all of us. this aspect of, you know, not giving too much importance to the ritualistic side of things, at the same time having a certain acceptance of practices from all religions.
Yes.
For example, you know, I was just looking at the daily schedule in Prashanthi Nilayam. If you just look at it, early morning chanting of Omkaram Suprabhatam, and even people from the Islam, they have the early morning prayer. So they have the namaz right from the early morning. And so that is not a new practice as such. But then chanting together Omkaram. And then Suprabhatam, of course, is a very Hindu or, you know, Sanatan Dharma way of approach, where you, you are awakening the Lord within you. Everything that the Indian way of life, the Sanatan Dharma, stood for has a deeper meaning. But in Prashanthi Nilayam, Swami has combined, like Nagar Sankirtan after that. Nagar Sankirtan, I believe there is this, it's been a tradition in the Sikh religion. Nagar Kirtan, that's what they say, where they go around singing the... So Swami has said that we should have Nagar Sankirtan here. So that is also Sanatan Dharma. It is not because it's a Sikh religion or some other religion. Then, of course, we have bhajans, which is also inspired by Guru Nanak Ji, and Swami has himself said that several times. Of course, Veda chanting, which Swami started towards the end of, towards the last few years, you cannot say it is purely Hindu. It is universal. It does. You cannot cut it down to. So I was. If you just look at these practices that Swami has institutionalized, and also several such practices which Swami guidelines for the organization, you see that these are based on the inner meaning of what these activities stand for. They are not based. You're not having, you know, like a typical temple abhishekam and puja and that. It has its own significance. But Swami said group singing, bhajan, that is more important.
I mean, wonderful. You know, when you look at be it the schedule of Prashanthi Nilayam or the schedule of the students in the hostel, you know, you get just like... schedule in Prashanthi Nilayam is like how a spiritual life should be led. Get up early in the morning, and you know, and your day winds very early, actually. I mean, when Bhagwan, in the initial years, I remember 9 o'clock ashram used to be absolutely dark. And Swami would always encourage that you get up very early in the morning. And Swami's, we know Swami's schedule, used to get up 3:45 in the, I was reading in the early days, you know, in the Pathamandiram days. Swami used to sleep outside, you know, with all the devotees. They would just, they would sleep around Swami, ladies on one side and, you know, gents on another side. And they have seen how Swami would get up much before any of the devotees get up.
If at all he slept. I think he would have just been lying and waiting. Ah, chalo, now time's up.
and you know, and then, of course, he would go and finish his bath and all that, shower and all that. And so what I'm trying to say is, in those days itself, when Swami inculcated those habits of Indian way of life in the devotees who came, if you look at this paragraph, you know, what Swami is saying here, one very important thing is, Bharatiyas, one thing is, yes, Bharatiyas have become self-realized souls, and, you know, they have earned the grace of the divine and attain self-realization, because if you follow these tenets of Sanatana Dharma, you are going to attain that goal. And Swami is saying, the unique thing about Bharatiyas is they have worshipped all such self-realized masters. Whatever their caste, faith or gender, it does not matter. Because once you are there, once you reach that stage, no boundaries. You are above all boundaries. And once you are in that stage, then you experience oneness. I mean, each statement here actually is so profound. And I could not help but recall, you know, we are talking about Swami's avatar, and I was thinking about Venkavaduta. Sri Kondamaraju Garu, Swami's in the earthly grandfather, used to talk about Venkavaduta. And it is said that the purity that was there in the Ratnakaram family, in Swami's family, it was because of the transformation in the character and in the mindset of everyone in the family that happened because of the touch of sage Venkavaduta.
Okay.
About 300 years ago. And
Sri Kondamaraju always used to feel that deep connect with Venkavadhuta. He used to many times feel that, you know, he's listening to him. He's being guided by him. And that is the reason why, of course, he named Swami's earthly father as Venkamma. You know, the elder son was Pedda Venkamma and the younger son was Chinna Venkamma. It was all because of Venkavadhuta. And interestingly, Venkavadhuta came from Maharashtra.
Okay.
And they say that, you know, one afternoon, nobody knows from where he came, what was his birth. One afternoon, under a banyan tree, Kondamaraju happens to see him. And Kondamaraju has very beautifully described that meeting that he had with Venkavadhuta.
Okay.
And he says that that is when Venkavadhuta told him that the earth is in deep distress. Narayana himself will come. That's what Venkavadhuta had declared to Kondamaraju Garu. And Kondamaraju Garu later has described what he felt when he met Venkavadhuta. And he says, and I have to read this out because this is so powerful words. He says, no face could ever be gloomy in his presence, for he was always smiling and jovial. No door ever closed as he passed by because everyone invited him in. People everywhere claimed him as their kinsman, but he himself refused to accept any relationship or ties with anyone. He was hungry only when another in his presence was hungry. He wore clothes only when they were wound around him. He carried his body as if it were a dress put on him. He had no attachment to it. So the rain washed it, the sun dried it, sleep visited it occasionally and left whenever it was unwelcome. When he looked, his eyes shone bright. When he spoke, his voice was steady and soothing. When he placed his hand on the head of someone, the touch was a prelude to paradise. He was like a breeze, a cloud, a bird on flight from earth to heaven. No one knew anything about him. None could guess where he came from or to where indeed he went. He was here, there, everywhere. Everywhere for more years than anyone could ever calculate or guess.
Beautiful.
You know, to me, this describes, Swami mentions about, you know, people who follow the Bharatiya culture, they become self-liberated souls. You know, I feel this is what a self-liberated soul is.
Absolutely.
Is all about.
In fact, as you were reading out this, this is an analogy which, this is an example which everybody knows. You know, the life of Adi Shankara.
Yes.
Like, yes, he was following the scriptural way, the Sanatana Dharma. He had taken up sannyas. But as far as the heart is concerned, like when his mother was in the last moments, he had given his word to his mother.
Yes.
That he would come back. So, you know, the spirit with which they followed this,
yes,
the spirit with which, I think at all these rituals and all these, yes, dogmas, they've all fade away when, yes, when your spirit is aligned with the truth.
Yes. Absolutely.
So,
yes. Wow.
Because there comes a time where, you know, you're not separating daily life,
yes,
from spiritual life.
Correct.
And Swami would often say that. In fact, we have spoken about it several times,
yes,
how you would say, don't separate daily life from spiritual life.
Yes.
So Sanatana Dharma is meant for daily life.
Yes.
Daily life, you do what you're meant,
yes,
to do.
Yes.
You continue doing what you're doing. At the same time, you are in sync with the absolute truth.
Absolutely. I mean, every ritual has to be converted into making it spiritual.
Exactly. Swami has often told how, you know, when you're cutting vegetables,
yes,
you can think, I'm cutting my ego.
Yes.
And when you're doing several other things, you can offer it to the Lord. You can...
I think we have talked about Professor Venkatraman's pen, right?
Yes. We have spoken several times about it. So,
yes.
I think these...
Yeah.
And there is this very beautiful question that comes up. Like Swami says, how do you know that a person is realized? So when a person is actually realized, when you are in the presence of a realized soul, There's no need for the realized soul to say that the effulgence is such that automatically it draws adoration.
Yes.
It automatically draws reverence and it automatically draws that, because like you read out that beautiful description.
Yes.
There's so much similarity with Swami himself. Like,
oh, yeah.
Look at, in fact, one of the devotees was telling me, because he had the opportunity to be with Swami in close quarters. He said, I was very keenly observing. And at no point in time, Swami would himself say, come, let us go and have food.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody has to come and tell him Swami food is ready and invite him to have food.
But if any has to feed others,
then he is. So, you know, he was not dependent on any of these things.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, it's a very inspiring anecdote as well, because when we are saying that he was not, he wore the body like a cloth,
yes,
which he just carried upon himself, that incident of 2003 when Swami was being taken to the hospital,
yes,
in Bangalore from Thrai. Swami is asking, hey, have you put that saris and dhotis inside that ambulance?
Yes.
Have you put the saris and dhotis? I have to give to all. Swami, think about yourself. Think about yourself. Even in that moment when Swami is being taken for a surgery,
yes,
he is only thinking about others.
Yeah.
And he's telling, have you put that saris and dhotis inside? And I believe Swami later said that this body is your responsibility.
Yes.
I have come for you all.
Yes.
And he is only thinking about all of us. Mm. And that to look after his body is the devotee's responsibility.
Mm. In fact, after the operation, when Bhagwan was, when Swami returned to Thrai Vrindavan and he was being taken by two brothers to his room, you know, he was on the stretcher. And so Swami was trying to communicate something.
Mm.
So I was speaking to one of these brothers. And so he thought, you know, probably, you know, the pillow is not placed properly. You know, maybe Swami is uncomfortable. So they were trying to go near and trying to understand what Swami is trying to say. And they were not able to understand, you know, because they're not able to figure out what is uncomfortable with Swami. But when they went even closer, they made out that Swami is telling, the doctors might have come. Have you made arrangements for their tea, coffee and biscuits?
My God.
They're like, oh my God, Swami, please.
Oh my God, it's so amazing, so amazing. How, you know, with every second, Swami used to tell us,
yes,
you know, as students,
yeah,
when we say, from top to toe, not one,
yes,
iota of selfishness.
Selfishness. Yeah, wow. Fantastic. In fact, as I was reading further also about Venkavadutta, you know, he attained Jiva Samadhi.
Okay.
About 300 years ago, as I mentioned. And the place is called Chaudeshwaripura. It is in Karnataka. It's in the Pavagada Taluk of Karnataka. Apparently now it is called Husainpura, you know, after it was taken over by the Nawab of Hyderabad. And there's an interesting story of when he first went to that place, which is now called Husainpura. The story goes that one day, the bullocks of a peasant, his name was Mokkarolu.
Mm-hmm.
So those bullocks fell into a well. And you know, many people were trying to bring these animals up and they were not able to do. And suddenly, this Venkavadutta comes that way and he sees all these people struggling. And he says, why do you all struggle so much?
Mm-hmm.
No need to pull that bullock up like that. They will come out. On their own, they will come out.
Mm.
People are wondering, what do you mean they will come out on their own?
Hmm.
So he just looks inside that well and he calls them, come, come.
Hmm.
And those bullocks, they start walking, it seems, on the wall of the well.
Hmm.
And they just quietly walk up, you know, as if it's they're walking on land.
Amazing.
And they just come out of the well and everyone is flabbergasted there. And that's when they realize, oh my God, he's something else. And they request him to actually stay back. Because they feel it's such a great fortune that, you know, such an enlightened master is here. And the same villager, Mokkarolu, he builds a small hut for him. And he says, please stay with us in this village and please bless us. So that is the place where he stayed. And when he attained Jiva Samadhi, also, you know, they made his tomb there exactly the same place. Now, many years passed. And later on, some Muslims objected And they said, you know, how can you have his samadhi? Because this was that was sort of in the center of a place, you know. So they felt, how can a prime real estate be occupied, you know, by tomb of one avadhuta, one Hindu saint and all that. So they contacted the Nawab, and the Nawab said, okay, fine, you know, you shift the tomb to some other area. So a soldier was assigned the task of uncovering the tomb. And when they did that, what they saw left them absolutely bedazzled, because when they opened, they saw that all the puja material that they had placed, when they had placed his body, the lamps and all the puja material, everything was intact. The lamps were burning still. They were so shocked. They thought, oh my God, let's not do anything. He's still there. He's still alive. And so they closed the tomb. And in fact, all the people who saw that, those soldiers and the entire, you know, all boundaries now disappear. Everybody became his devotee. And, you know, and for them, he's a God there, a self. And, you know, as Swami says, you know, once you have attained that oneness, then there are no boundaries. People also forget. You know, all our all these. You are Muslim. I am Hindu. You know, you should do this. You shouldn't do that. This is the way I should pray. You should pray. Oh, everything melts once you are in that stage. And that's how, you know, Vedanta is all about that, isn't it? That oneness. Sufism is all about that. If you go to the core of any religion,
right?
When you go to the essence, ultimately it is that that oneness, and that is what is the essence of Sanatana Dharma too. And Swami says, you know, Swami says one should courageously strive to attain this Sanatana Dharma. I mean, Sanatana Dharma is, if anything we have to attain this.
Correct.
Which means moksha is Sanatana Dharma.
Correct.
And Swami says this is the duty of every Bharatiya. I mean, this is the duty of every Bharatiya. And I remember in the previous segment, Swami said, no, who is a Bharatiya?
Correct. Yes.
It's not just, you know, the tag of an Indian in the geographical space. Anybody, as Swami says, who has Rati. Rati for Bhagwan. Rati for Bhagwan is a Bharatiya. And it's really, I think you can go on narrating. There are so many such enlightened masters in India.
Right.
And you take anyone's life and, you know, they leave you speechless with what they have attained. And I think there is so much inspiration. That's the reason why Swami always used to mention that students, apart from reading their regular subject books, if they should read anything else, when the warden asked Swami, what are the books? Because there were some books, there were students reading some books which the warden felt were not appropriate. So he went and asked Swami, what are the books that students should read? Swami said they should read the lives of saints and sages. That is what is there,
yes.
Because that is what will inspire you. No need to read about philosophies, because philosophies can confuse you. Swami said if you read the lives of saints and sages and you see through their lives, you will learn. You will see what ups and downs they go through. You know, you can relate to your ups and downs also as you walk on the spiritual path, and that will be enough inspiration for you. So, wow, I think there is so much in this segment. In fact, you know, in just like in every segment of Prema Vahini, but, you know, here when Bhagavan is talking about Sanatana Dharma is such an ocean that you can never...
Absolutely.
You can only perhaps just share one or two thoughts, and dear listeners, it is up to us to dive deep into this beautiful ocean which is only filled with pearls. And thanks to Bhagwan, you know, he has brought this into our light. I many times wonder, you know, but for Swami, would I even think about all these things that I'm thinking, you know, would I be, you know, even having even this much of understanding? And we should be really grateful that, you know, Swami actually painstakingly wrote all this way back in the 50s and 60s. And fortunately, this is something he really, you know, it was not something that he spoke and we don't have the tapes. This is something that he wrote, fortunately, and it was published in Sanatana Sarthi. So this is something that we have. It is the most priceless treasure that Bhagwan has given for all of us to ruminate on. So let's take time out and this is the only sadhana worthwhile doing for us in our lifetime. So dear listeners, as you do this sadhana of going through the Prema Vahini and learning how to fill your lives with that Prema, making our own lives a Prema Vahini, it would be
really wonderful if you share your thoughts, your insights, and you know, your experiences, because we hold each other's hands, and that is how we go in this journey from I to we to he. So please feel free to share whatever insights you get and whatever experiences you have as you make bold to walk on this beautiful path. It's time to bring this session to a close. Thank you so much for being with us. As always, if you have any queries or comments, please feel free to write to us, listener@radiosai.org. And just a note, this chapter 17 is according to the English Prema Vahini. The chapterization in the Telugu Prema Vahini is slightly different, but everything is contained. But probably in the next episode onwards, I will give you the exact chapter in Telugu Prema Vahini, if you are referring to that. I mean, if you know Telugu, I mean, that is the best thing to do, to actually read Swami's original Telugu. I will give the reference of which chapter this maps to in Telugu Prema Vahini from the next episode onwards. But this is definitely there. If you just look around the heading of Sanatan Dharma in the index, you will definitely find it. So let's take some time out and fill our lives with this Prema of our Bhagwan. Thank you so much. Sairam.